Well, when we hear that introduction, it's always two guys at the bar talking baseball, and I hope we can do that soon. Right now, we're two guys at the walk-up window or the parking lot in Westlake talking baseball at Original Joe's, and we welcome Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Bruce, how you doing? How are things?
Good. I mean, it could be worse. We could be two guys at the DMV. So, you know, that's the way you have to look at it, Marty. But I'm doing well.
I like you. Hey, the I-5 series is over. And, you know, when you were on last Saturday, I said, Bruce, you've got a 3-1 lead here. You're not going to blow this thing, are you? And sure enough, well, it's happened.
Well, I managed to blow it in vintage fashion. I mean, it got so bad that we lost Game 7, 19-6. It turned into a farce. There might as well have been a lap track on that one. but as we all know, the fateful move was aiming to close out the series with Dennis Eckersley when there were plenty of reasons to leave Lefty Gomez, the great Lefty Gomez, Yankees pitcher from the 1930s, who is the only pitcher, the only starter for me who could get anybody out in the series. He's got a gem going, and as you know, Marty, we've talked about this on the air, whether it's Lincecum or Bumgarner or whatever. I hate to see a guy come out of a game when he's pitching great, and especially if there's no sign of trouble, just because he's thrown a certain amount of pitches. And, well, we've got this closer out there. Let's use him. Now, I have to say, the idea of closing out a series with Dennis Eckersley isn't the worst thing I ever heard. And that was my overriding thought. But Lefty Gomez went into the eighth inning cruising. He gives up a leadoff homer to Bobby Bonds. So you know you have somebody up in the bullpen. But he retired the next three guys. So I kind of went against my basic nature there. And, well, next thing you know, it's 19-6, and everybody's drunk, and we're horrible.
And you got fired mid-game, and Billy Martin took over.
Yeah, I did. I fired myself mid-game. Billy took over. He didn't last long. As it got worse, he got disgusted. He left the park, went to a bar. He's looking for a decent place to drink, and turns out Bill Rigney was in there, so Bill Rigney comes over. He comes in and manages my team. He was the Giants' first manager in 1958, so we had a little fun with it, Marty.
All right. Well, you know, it's so funny because you and I have talked baseball probably for 20 years, and then the whole issue has been don't take the guy out when he's pitching well. And here's Lefty Gomez.
That's me. That is so me. I'm one of the staunch supporters of that theory. And I will say he didn't cruise through the eighth. He gave up a bomb. You know, I'm going to say it was 480 feet by Bobby Bonds. But anyway, it's still that one backfired. So,
but it was a success, the project. And I know working with the LA Times, will you do it again? And what was your sort of post-mortem on it?
Oh, it was tremendous. The 100,000 people voting and Kapler and Dave Roberts getting in there, people were following this thing daily and emailing me and John Shea, who was writing the Gamers, emailing Henry Schulman, who was hosting the post-game shows. And you know, having John Miller in there, that just iced it. I mean, he was so into it. He wanted to do even more than he did. And I had to talk to our technical guys, and I said, listen, they just wanted to do like one John highlight per game. I'm saying, he wants to do this. Let's get, please, more of him and less of us, you know. So he was invaluable. He's such a great guy. I would like to do it again. It's funny because I heard from a guy in Ohio who's tight with the APBA company, and he wants to take the Ohio team against Southern California in a big show down there. And I've got teams from every region. I said, okay, I'll give you my Ohio team right now. It's ready to go, including, you know, as not just the guys born in Ohio, but who grew up there. So in some cases, you add guys who grew up there. In some cases, you lose them. They were born in Ohio, but they moved out at an early age anyway. Mm-hmm. That's something that may yet happen. So it's ongoing.
Well, I assume Cy Young would be one of them.
No, absolutely. He opens.
he opens every
there.
Game.
But
come on.
They come back with. Oh my gosh. You know, Jim Bunning and Rube Marquardt, and you could throw Harvey Haddix in there, and Dave Dravecki for sentiment. And meanwhile, you got Pete. Yeah, Pete Rose and Jimmy Wynn and Thurman Munson, Mike Schmidt. Yeah, all the teams are loaded. That's what makes it so much fun.
Well, I'm glad you did it, and I think it gave me a lot of fun to follow it. And Gomez, but it's part of baseball. So congratulations on the beginning of the project, all the 100,000 votes, John Miller, John Shea, Henry, and everybody else. It was well done. So good job. Good job.
I appreciate that a lot, Marty. I'm hoping we can do it again. I don't know about annually, but at some point I'd love to do it again.
All right. Well, we'd like to have baseball again at some point. I know this is ad nauseum with what's going on in the country and what we see on the news every night. And then to hear these 94, 95 redo negotiations once again, it's deja vu all over again with baseball. What's your thought as we move along here?
Well, there's so much distrust. These two sides don't trust each other. They never have. I mean, I don't know when it was. It goes back to, trying to get free agency from owners who just wanted to sign you to a one-year contract and get rid of you if you had a bad year, and, players fighting for their rights. It goes back so far, but that happens in all sports. But we just saw in the NBA where the players and the commissioner and the head of the players' union, Michelle Roberts, have been just talking for years, like constantly, tinkering this and that, tidying up the collective bargaining agreement without shutting things down. They worked magnificently on this. And here we have baseball. Well, they're either going to play 50 or 114 games, okay? So they're getting close. I mean, what the hell?
Really? Isn't it really? It's almost unbelievable. And you've got the pandemic, you've got a depression, you've got the violence, you've got 1968 all over again, and we're arguing about that, and you can't even get to the other issue of whether they're healthy enough to play. So baseball was slow in their reaction to the George Floyd murder, and it took 9 days for them to say something.
Yeah, that's just unconscionable. I can't even imagine that. With all the players, forget the African American. I mean, just people in general are appalled by this. So throughout Major League Baseball, and they were making some individual statements for MLB to just sit in their hands and not get this other deal done. They're not getting anything done. They're not doing anything right. They don't trust the players, and the players don't trust the owners, and I don't blame the players at all. I mean, they really have no idea what's going on with the owners' finances. There's a lot of ways you can cut that. If you say we're going to cut you in on this and not that, well, exactly what are you talking about here? So it really looks bad. I mean, the only reason I'd be optimistic about there being a baseball season is that it just has to happen. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I couldn't give you any reason why it would happen.
Yeah. And I think there's an element, Barry Bloom has talked about it on the show weeks ago, that maybe the players and maybe they really don't want to play. Maybe there's a lot of them that have misgivings for whatever reason, maybe financial or health reasons, that they're not that enthusiastic about doing it. And I think that's part of it. I really think that's
part of it. Oh, no question. That's a huge part of it to me. And they don't want to stand up and say that. Athletes, certainly don't want to look weak. And there's always been a lot of swagger to big league ball players. They're bulletproof and they're tough, and they don't want to admit this thing. I guarantee you, a lot of them are not enjoying the prospect at all, especially if it's only 48 games. We're so late, and they're getting so late in the year. I don't know. I do think that's big. I mean, let's just say Jason Stark and Bob Nightingale and John Heyman, they're all saying that if the baseball season is canceled, that the game will be irreparably damaged. Or some of them said, it's over, the game will die. Well, that's not true. But let's just say that the NBA thing doesn't work out. They get some positive tests. It goes haywire. Maybe the NFL doesn't work out. In retrospect, baseball canceling its season isn't going to look so bad. The only problem is that it would have been canceled because of money and not health.
That's the issue. That's the issue. That's what it comes down to. All right. Well, we can't change it, but every week I say next week we'll have information, and next week comes and we're still talking about Gus Bell hitting for the cycle. So.
Let's get Wally Post in here at least.
What can I tell you? Some of the moments of baseball. One, of course, I said 1968. Of course, June 4th, Robert Kennedy was shot, and it had the baseball connection. It was the night Don Drysdale pitched a sixth straight shutout for the Dodgers, and Drysdale eventually broke Walter Johnson's record. But Robert Kennedy even said it, boy, I hope I have a week or a year or an election like Drysdale's having. And he acknowledged it.
Yeah.
Of course, we had the tragedy that night. So we have that to go back to. Bruce, where were you when that happened?
I was on the campus of Cal, UC
Berkeley.
Yeah, you were
at Berkeley, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you get so used to just chaos in the country. I mean, you know, we all remember when JFK was killed, that was something that most of us had couldn't even fathom, really. And there was nothing quite like that. And, of course, you never get used to anything, but it's just – and being on the Berkeley campus, there were all kinds of chaotic things going on, you know, tear gas and National Guard and protests and, you know, change being brought about. But that was just something that left everyone stunned. And, you know, for baseball – you know, who can think about baseball? But there was this weekend coming up there, and six games were eventually postponed. But the Giants actually were balking on the idea. I don't know if you know about, I just was reading about this today. The Giants had a bat day coming up, and Horace Stoneham really wanted to play. He wanted the gate receipts, and kind of he finally relented, but not before saying, we're going to play.
Mm. Interesting. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I know Maury Wills, he sat out. He was with the Pirates then, and it was a big deal.
I think that was Martin Luther King, wasn't it?
I think it was, well, I could be wrong.
Yeah, maybe I think it was. Martin Luther King, there were MLB completely sat on its hands, and finally the players, many of them, one of whom was Wills, finally just wouldn't put up with it, and they finally got some games postponed. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Martin Luther King. But in either case, you know, just insane developments.
Mm, amazing. Well, another one, 1977, June 5th. And of course, we have D-Day today, which I want to touch on with you as well. But Walter Alston's number was retired. And why do I bring it up, Bruce? I looked at his numbers, and you tell me who this sounds like. Managing for 23 years. 2,040 wins, 1,613 losses, a .558 percentage, 7 pennants, and 4 World Series. Does that ring a bell for you to anyone close to us?
Well, Bruce Bochy.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Bruce Bochy and Walter Alston. And I think it puts Bochy into some perspective for me because Alston has always been revered as, you know, the Hall of Fame manager, and Bochy... You know, so I as soon as I saw the numbers, I said, boy, that's Bruce Bochy.
Yeah, you know, Alston is revered and just an automatic, and don't even think about it, Hall of Famer. And I'd like to think that Bochy is, too. Like you say, 4 World Series, won 3 of them. Or 5 World Series. No, I'm sorry, Dusty mentioned 0-2. Won 3 World Series, got there with San Diego against a great Yankee team. But just, you know, everything about Bochy to me spoke to a Hall of Fame career. The way that they sent him out at the Giants ballpark was just so memorable in so many ways. It was very touching and heartfelt, and it just seems to me that he's destined for that. Mm-hmm. And what's on the subject, do you think he's going to come back and manage?
No.
I don't either.
I think what's happened in the world here over the last 6 months or so, I think for people like Bochy, what for? You know?
Yeah,
I just
absolutely.
Think,
and when are we going to get a day like that? You know, anytime soon that he enjoyed at the end of his day, managing days.
Yeah, but I like that once, as soon as I saw the numbers and I thought about it, I said, boy, that's Bruce Bochy. So slam dunk Hall of Fame, no question. You know, and there was always that little bit of doubt. Boy, he's been anointed Hall of Fame, but he deserves it. He deserves it.
And you know, the Alston teams are always right in the mix as favorites with Koufax and Drysdale. And, mm-hmm. you know, Casey Stengel's teams were, Lord knows they were favorites and usually came through. Joe McCarthy and Miller Huggins. But Bruce Bochy's three World Series teams were doubted the whole way through. And they had one comeback win after another, wins on the road and improbable stuff. And they pulled off all three of them, you know, against popular vote. So that's another big factor in his favor.
Yep. I think no question in my mind. I'm glad we saw that today. 1940, Warren Spahn signs with the Boston Bees. Of course, he goes on to win 363 games, and he doesn't pitch again until after World War II. But Casey Stengel's the manager, says Spahn's got no guts. He doesn't like him, and he sends him to the minor leagues, and that's the end of Warren Spahn until after the war. But Warren Spahn gets his revenge in 1957 against Casey Stengel. How about that?
In the World Series?
Yeah, come on. And Bushville wins.
Yeah. Well, he, as the story goes, in the spring of 1942, the Boston Braves, Casey told him to knock down Pee Wee Reese, and he didn't do it.
That's right.
And he called him gutless. Well, 5,000 gutless innings later, he's still pitching. And it's funny, you know, I looked it up and I was thinking, you know, he wasn't a guy like Drysdale who just liked to go after people. I don't think he believed in it. The year that, in 1963, when Spahn and Juan Marichal had that epic game where they each pitched 16 innings and Willie Mays finally won it with a home run, but they both go 16. In 1963, he pitched 259-something innings and didn't hit anybody.
Wow.
In the entire season. And he only averaged like two hit batters in a year in his whole career. So he just, that wasn't him. It had nothing to do with his guts. He's just like, what the hell? I don't want to knock down Pee Wee Reese just now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He was probably right. Who knows?
Yeah, he was. And, well, he went off to the war, came back.
Yeah, battled the Bulge. And,
God. Had the career. And then in 1957, he and Lou Burdett, who also was a former Yankee, knock out the New York Yankees, and the John Klemer book is fabulous. The Bushville wins. The Milwaukee Braves win the World Series with the two guys that Stengel couldn't stand. I love it.
Yeah, well, I got to credit you, Marty. You're the one who told me about that book, and man, it's great for anybody who likes to go back to relive baseball in the 50s and well, that one particular season, but that's such a great season with the young, you know, Henry Aaron and Eddie Matthews and Spahn and Burdett going against the Yankees, you know, beautiful convergence of talent there, and it's really well told, amazing detail on how that season played out and the personalities and how some of the Braves viewed Jackie Robinson, didn't put him in very good light, you know, they didn't put those players in very good light, and a fascinating book. But yeah, I'm sure Stengel was scratching his head after that series.
Yeah, well, he said, Bushville? I mean, Milwaukee? Where the heck is Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Remember, he said that on the train. That was a great comment. Other things kind of around this time, and it's kind of fun to look back on some of the things about baseball history. 2008, Chipper Jones hits number 400 of his home runs. Of course, his switch-hitting home run hitters, Mantle and Eddie Murray, are the only two above Chipper. But Chipper Jones, do we think of him like Schmidt and Brooks Robinson and George Brett? Do we put Chipper in that category? Do you see him that way, Bruce?
I never saw him quite that way. Like, there's an all-time great Saints Hall of Famer, and I usually don't give somebody a Hall of Fame vote, like looking back, like, oh wow, look at what added up for this guy. But you know, really, all through his career, he was just a tremendous player, a tremendous fielder, tremendous hitter, switch hitter. So you know, maybe people weren't paying quite enough attention, but I think what I'm hearing and reading now, I think he's in that company, and he really belongs there. I mean, just a tremendous career. He had the longevity, he had the power, he hit for average, and Lord knows those Braves teams, they were winners. You know, they were winners because of Glavine and Smoltz and a lot of guys, but Chipper Jones was huge.
Yeah, he's aging well, let's put it that way.
Yeah, so he gets better every year.
Right? Yeah, he's like a wine. He's aging very well, and he's outspoken, and people listen to him.
He's a good voice.
Yeah, this is the anniversary of 44, 60,000 troops hit the beach at Normandy. The eight-game schedule is canceled on D-Day, and Spahn is part of it. The Yogi Berra, I didn't realize his part in D-Day until I read the book, part of the book that I Joe Passan wrote that I had him on a couple of weeks ago. But D-Day, can you imagine, project yourself back to 1944, and here's the war and all the uncertainty, and everything we go through today is crazy enough, and you got 60,000 troops hitting the beach of Normandy, and there's no baseball that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's amazing the undertaking. I think even going in, President Eisenhower estimated that we could lose 70% of the people storming the beach at Normandy. And, you know, it was an amphibious, attack from the water. And some of the guys didn't even get to the beach. Mm-hmm. Or they took one step on the beach and they're gone.
That's right.
And here's Yogi Berra, who hadn't really played in the big leagues. He just was a kid from the minor leagues in Norfolk, from the Hill in St. Louis, from Joe Garagiola country, and he's right in the middle of this thing. He'd never been in combat, and managed to survive it. And so many people come back from heavy military action. That certainly qualifies, and Lord knows Vietnam does too. And they're not the same person, you know, that they were before. And he was very young when he went in, but, you know, he was always a tremendously upbeat guy. And Lord knows he was hilarious, and, he had the Yogi malaprops or anything. But I don't think you would ever be around that man and realize that he'd gone through that kind of trauma, mm-hmm. And come out of it with such with his integrity and his perception and everything and what he's doing now, so intact. And it's true. I didn't realize that he was part of that until recently. And my God, fighting off the Nazis, and that was like one of the all-time life-changing battles in the history of the world.
Mm. Leadership.
Yeah,
that's what it took for a country to get behind it, to be leadership. Boy, all right, we'll end on this one. 10-cent beer night, 1974. It's Cleveland. 25,000 people in the stands. They drink 60,000 cups of beer. Ninth inning, they all storm the field. It's crazy. The game gets forfeited, and that's the end of beer night.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, anytime you offer the fans that you can drink all the beer you want, 10 cents a pop. I mean, at the end of the game, there was a woman, flashing her breasts and trying to kiss the umpire. A guy went on the field completely nude and slid into second base. Two guys are mooning the fans from right field of the bleachers. Billy Martin's involved. There was one incident where the fans did something to Jeff Burrows. He's managed in Texas, and he charges out in the field, and there's players behind him, and they got bats in their hand, and it was it could have been just there could have been deaths. I mean, there literally could have been. Fans had beer bottles and chains and God knows what. And I love the aftermath. They said something like, because they had more beer nights planned. And they go, well, now you can only have four in these ensuing beer nights. just four and you'll be fine. And I saw this great quote from Lee McPhail, the American League president, after the game. He goes, there was no question that beer played a part in the riot.
Yes.
Well, Lee, you nailed it there.
I remember Mike Hargrove was with Cleveland, and I should have told Raf to pull it out of our archives because I think I did an interview with him. He said the fans came over the wall. It was like the army. It was like an invasion. That's the players watching this happen when they all stormed the field. It was crazy.
Yeah, Hargrove got in a full-on fight with a fan.
Did he? Okay. Yeah, I'm sure I did a show with him. Years ago. Hey, yeah. We had Barry Tompkins. We're going to have him on later in the show tonight. And, of course, we commended you for the wonderful articles you did about him. Bruce, when you look at his career, his sports career in the Bay Area and the country, this is a legitimate Bay Area sports icon, very much so.
Oh, man. He once read an article about all the sports that I guess that exist. And he'd covered just about all of them. He figured it out that he's worked in some capacity in 48 of the 50 states, and those are just numbers, but I mean he was a guy who could do anything. And a lot of the things he did, like Olympic boxing or Wimbledon tennis, he'd never done before.
Right.
Even the first time he got a television job, somebody goes, so have you ever been on television before? He goes, oh, yeah. You know, but no, he hadn't been.
He had a TV at home.
He had a television. He'd never done tennis. He'd never done boxing. But as he said, you always say yes, and then you take it from there. And then you got to do it on your talent. And it's amazingly, the guy just... He had instant flow and knowledge and confidence, but the thing that always stood out to me was his humility. He was the anti, you know, Howard Cosell. He always made it about him with the great bombast. As I said two innings ago, or you know, wisely predicted.
I'm glad you did those articles, and he'll be with us later on in the show tonight.
That's wonderful.
The other one later on in the show is Brad Mangin. Who chose the beautiful color pictures for the Maze book, John Shea's Maze book. And I look at that book and I pick it up, Bruce, and I open the book up, and it is the expressions of Willie Mays. Every picture, there's something about that expression on his face that tells you the story of that picture.
That's really well said. And I'll tell you, everyone out there listening to Brad, realize that he is a wonderful historian of baseball photography, and as he said, he knew where to get who shot what and when and how to get these things. But he was and is easily one of the greatest baseball shooters in the country. I mean, he's in Neil Leifer category.
I said he's one of the top in the country.
We used to have a game out at Candlestick Park of the media against the front office. We'd play on a Saturday with the team out of town. We'd play hardball. And we're all out there, you know, on a windless Saturday, and it's the greatest thing ever. And Brad would always shoot the games for nothing and come up with these incredible shots of everybody playing, a guy making a stab at third or a play in the outfield or just taking a cut or, you know, friends' shots by the dugout, and he just buffed everybody out. He did this year after year. He's a real treasure.
Yeah, love it. Love it. And there was another good – you had a good month of articles.
Oh, well, thanks to I write about nothing, Marty. I'm tremendous when it comes to nothing.
You and Jerry Seinfeld. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Great to have you on, and be well and safe. And as I always say, maybe next week we'll figure something out.
Yeah, it used to be maybe next year. Now it's maybe next week in baseball, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you, Marty. All right. Have a good night. All right.
You bet.
That is the great Bruce Jenkins. All right. Hey, goodness. Well, what a show. All right. It's always a pleasure to have everyone with us. We've got more coming up right after this.